Yes, so my name is Dr. Catherine Simpson. I'm a senior lecturer in the politics and economics of the European Union, and I am the director of research for Keele Business School.
Well, it's very good to catch up with you today. Thank you for your time. You're fairly new to Keele, aren't you? Tell us a little bit about your academic journey to Keele.
Yes, so I am pretty new to Keele. I joined Keele in December 2022, and I've been an academic pretty much since I finished my PhD in 2014. My background is in European studies or European politics and French. I studied at Queen's University in Belfast. And then I moved to the University of Bath to do a joint master's, again in European politics and contemporary society. So it was a year in Bath and a year at Sciences Po in Paris. And then I went to the University of Kent, and I was based in Canterbury for 3 years, where I did my PhD. And my PhD and background in that perspective is looking at attitudes towards the European Union, and in particular, attitudes towards the EU in the Republic of Ireland, which is where I'm from.
What attracted you to Keele then?
What I really liked about Keele was, I think the campus is absolutely beautiful. I think it's such a beautiful space, and I think that's quite unique in higher education as well. I think we're starting to see so many universities in kind of, you know, cities. But also I think it was the opportunity to really make an impact with my research and be part of a very ambitious and progressive team. And I think that's ultimately what drew me to Keele, was kind of its ambitions for the local community, higher education more broadly, and also the ambitions for the business school.
Let's dig a little into your research interests. So when you get up in the morning, where do you get your news from?
I get my news straight away from RTE, which is the Republic of Ireland's national broadcaster. I check RTE first, BBC Breakfast then goes on, and then somewhere in between I read a variety of newspapers. I think it's just, I haven't lived back home, as I call it, for kind of almost 15 years now, but it's really embedded within my research. And it's kind of, it's very, very important to keep obviously on top of things. But I also really like to see how the same stories are covered in different news outlets. It's one of the things I always teach my students to do. Pick a topic, read the same topic, but in different newspapers, whether that is a tabloid, a broadsheet, and then obviously kind of online as well. And I just really like kind of that narrative really that comes out and picking out those nuances.
Well, those nuances then, what have you found in your research?
So my research has kind of, you know, ultimately I'm a political scientist by trade. So I look at public opinion and, as I said, attitudes towards the EU. And I've published extensively on attitudes towards the European Union, in particular in the Republic of Ireland and, as a consequence as well, referendums. And really, that's like my bread and butter. That's what I'm really interested in. Why people vote the way they do, what motivates them to do that, why do they think that kind of way. And really then, as a consequence of that, based in the UK and obviously with the 2016 EU referendum, I very quickly became a Brexit expert, a phrase that doesn't particularly sit with me very well, I'm not going to lie. But it gave me the opportunity to really engage with a much wider audience and communicate my research to a much wider audience as well. So I did an awful lot of media work, in particular for the BBC. I was the academic commentator on Brexit for several years, from 2016 to 2019. So I spent a lot of time on the BBC breakfast red sofa, fact-checking, breaking down some of those narratives that were maybe on social media or different news outlets, what was coming out of other European countries with regards to Brexit. And I really, really enjoyed that. I'm very passionate about it. And I think as an academic, the research that we do, we're obviously very passionate about, but we're also publicly funded to do this research as part of a university, as part of academics and researchers within a higher education institution. And I think it's really, really important that that research does not get lost in this kind of ivory tower narrative. It needs and it must be communicated to the wider public. I'm not here to change anybody's opinion, but I think, you know, communicating things correctly is really, really important for, I think, higher education and the research that we do.
Do you see yourself in some way as a journalist?
No, I've just had this conversation with a colleague. No, I'm definitely not a journalist. One of the kind of first jobs I did when I was kind of probably figuring out whether I wanted to do a PhD or not, was working for an EU affairs radio station in France. And I absolutely loved it. It was a really unique model at the time. It was funded by the European Commission. And It had interns from every EU member state in the newsroom. So it was just, it was like a mini EU, and it was a really vibrant community, and you got to learn so much about kind of key issues in other member states. But I never loved it enough to pursue it as a career. I was very clear afterwards that I wanted to be an academic, and a job as a lecturer in particular was what I really wanted to do. So no, I've never wanted to be a journalist, I must admit.
This earlier stage in your career has really coincided with a very tumultuous period in British politics. That's quite fortunate for you.
Yeah, it was. Unfortunate is the word I use. I was really, really lucky that, you know, finishing my PhD in 2014, when the early stages I worked on the Scottish independence referendum in my first job, then moving into the 2015 general election, which the Conservatives were not predicted to win, which they ultimately did. And that's when David Cameron, the then Conservative Prime Minister, said that the Conservatives, if they did win, would have a referendum on the EU. I don't think anybody expected, as I say, that to happen, and certainly expected it to happen as quickly as it did as 2016. So 2016 was a real, I would argue, a critical juncture in my career because of Brexit. And it did afford me the opportunity to communicate the research that I'd been working on and my expertise to that wider public. And I was very, very fortunate as an early career researcher to be able to do that.
I read yesterday one of your latest pieces. It's in your email signature, mm-hmm. about the relationship the tabloid press had with the whole Brexit process. Just outline that bit of research for us.
So that was a piece of research that I did with a colleague based at the University of Bath and now John Cabot University in Rome, Dr. Nick Starton. And we kind of noticed, kind of after the immediate shock of Brexit, that there was something more nuanced about this. You know, again, you know, breakdown of the vote, it was very, very close. But what impacted, why did people vote the way they did? And we really did feel that there was something in particular among the tabloid press that influenced the Brexit vote. So what we did was we looked at the front pages of all of the tabloid newspapers in the 6 weeks prior to the EU referendum, which was the purdah period. So there was no government reports or anything like that. Official campaigning had stopped. And we really tracked to see kind of what was the narrative. And the tabloid press in the UK has long been Eurosceptic. And in particular, you know, you look at the front pages of the Sun newspaper in particular, Up Yours Dolores, you know, from the 90s, then kind of even coming even more recently to kind of Enemies of the People, which is obviously post-Brexit in the Daily Mail. So we looked at this, and what we found by tracking it was that there was a real strong stance on those front pages of a real anti-immigration sentiment that was really, really pushed by nearly all of the tabloid newspapers in the UK. And that subsequently influenced how people voted in the Brexit vote. And I think as well, what was interesting about that research is that you are bombarded by this kind of Eurosceptic narrative, whether you subscribe to it or not. You go to your petrol station to pay for your petrol. You see the newspapers lined up. You go into your local supermarket and you see the headlines. And then sometimes you might read between the lines. You may not necessarily be a tabloid newspaper reader, but you are bombarded with this approach and this Eurosceptic anti-immigration sentiment that really did feed in, as I say, to that Brexit vote. So that's been a really interesting piece more recently that I've worked on.
The journalism industry, newspapers in particular, with the decline of print circulation and the increase of news avoidance amongst people, how do you think that relationship between journalism and politics may change over the next decade or generation?
I think it's fundamental. I think we've seen a real change even in the last 10, 15 years. And I would argue, actually, even since Brexit, since 2016, I think coming into a general election next year in 2024, social media in particular is going to be absolutely crucial in order to really reach people. Again, I think it's been used. We saw it kind of being used for the first time, really, in the 2016 referendum campaign. We've had obviously subsequent general elections, 17, 19, but this 2024 election is going to be crucial, I think, for political parties to engage with that. And I think it's changed our landscape. We've got some newspapers now that are actually completely online. that don't have a print anymore, the iNewspaper, for example. And I think the way that we acquire our knowledge and our information now is very different. It's very online. And you almost self-subscribe as well. So, you know, kind of unconsciously as well, that, right, I'm going to follow these podcasts, I'm going to read this newspaper, I watch this news channel. And as a consequence, you self-subscribe almost to a political narrative that you may not even be aware of. So I think it's going to be very, very important for the next general election, but I think for the wider journalism community, and I think we're starting to see that as well, you know, a lot of kind of well-established journalists branching out into podcasting in particular, who would have worked for major news outlets and having the freedom to maybe discuss at length some key issues that they perhaps wouldn't have had the ability to do in the past.
So as director of research here at the Business School, what subject areas are you hoping to look at? AI, for example, is that going to be amongst them?
Absolutely, yes. So one of my roles as director of research in the Business School is to really grow the Business School. And it's a really exciting time for us. We've hired a lot of new members of staff, which has been really, really great. And we're also kind of, as I say, developing our research areas. So we have three research groups within the Business School. MMO, which is Marketing, Management and Organisation, Economics and Accounting and Finance. And we're really kind of growing these research areas. AI is definitely something that crosses all three of those research areas, data analytics, business analytics. I have colleagues that are working on kind of food security and kind of insects and as a source of protein, for example. So there's a real broad range. You've got someone like myself that works on kind of Brexit and trade and tabloid press and public opinion. Then you've got someone who's kind of a real, what I call hardcore data scientist, almost, who, you know, does some real number crunching. But we're all aiming for the same goal, is to really try and benefit local, national and global businesses and people. So it's a very, very exciting time for Keele Business School.
Looking more broadly across campus, are there other departments, other schools on campus that you feel particularly aligned with?
So the Business School sits within the Faculty of Social Sciences and Humanities. So we're a little bit on a limb in the Business School, because we're not, the actual building is not part of that, say, hub up the hill. But we are part of that faculty. So we do work very, very closely with colleagues in law, SPGS or SS as it now being known, humanities. And we work very, very closely with them. We have a really great relationship with them. One of the other things I think is really quite unique about the Business School, and one of the things that we're actively trying to pursue and push further, is working more closely with other faculties as well. So colleagues within medicine, but also kind of astrophysics. I've had some really lovely conversations with researchers there. And I see us as, you know, obviously the Business School is growing, but I want us to be really part as well of the university and wider, as say, departments. And Keele is known for its interdisciplinary research. And that is something that we do within the Business School. And I think we're really well placed, because we're in the Faculty of Social Sciences and Humanities, that we can work with colleagues within those other departments very, very closely and very, very well, actually, to really drive a good research agenda for the wider university and kind of, as I say, the local community more broadly.
Well, tell me, how are you going to apply your research and your findings to the economy of North Staffordshire?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big one. I get asked this quite a lot, and it's something I suppose I'm reflecting upon myself. I mean, one of the areas of research now that I'm moving into is kind of, we're post-Brexit. We've got an EU-UK withdrawal agreement. How is that going to be in place? And how actually now that the kind of crazy chaos of politics has subdued somewhat, certainly not at the kind of 2018-19 levels of chaos, you know, what's it going to be like in practice? And I think that's one of the things that I'm very closely working on now, working with colleagues internally but also externally to Keele about, right, how are businesses being impacted now that the withdrawal agreement is here? How are your supply chains impacted? Is it worse? Is it better? What about procurement of various products? And how is this impacting small businesses? On campus here, you know, we've got the Science Park. We have 50 businesses on our doorstep. I've had phenomenal conversations with colleagues that are and businesses that are working on areas of pharmaceuticals, engineering, who are really, really growing. And the business school, and it's obviously my research kind of is the same in particular, can really help and contribute to their growth. But also, you know, if they are having difficulties, how can we help them? How can we help those businesses grow? And how can we troubleshoot some of those issues they may be facing in a post-Brexit environment?
And what about life for yourself personally off campus? Have you moved to the area then more recently?
I haven't, no. So I still live in Cheshire, so I'm not too far away. Personally, it's a busy household. So I have a little girl who is 4 who just started school in the last week or so. So that's been a really exciting time, actually, for all of us. My husband, who is from Northern Ireland, splits his time between here, there and everywhere. So it's a busy time, but a really, really lovely time. And I have a very supportive family that allows me to pursue my career goals and ambitions very, very well. So I'm very thankful and grateful to them.
Thanks so much for your time. It's been really lovely to catch up with you. Maybe we'll interview you again in a year or so's time to see how you've progressed.
I would really, really like that. I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I would be delighted to have a chat with you again.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thank you.